I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome to Radio Times. The American College of Physicians released a position paper recently calling for a public health approach to reducing injuries and deaths from firearms, whether from mass killings or from daily gun violence. The NRA responded with a tweet, "Someone should tell the self-important doctors to stay in their lane." Half of the articles in Annals of Internal Medicine are pushing for gun control. Most upsetting, however, the medical community seems to have consulted no one but themselves. Well, doctors responded, "This is our lane," and described the agony of trying to save patients who have been shot. Our guest, Dr. Julie Milinek, tweeted, "Do you know how many bullets I pull out of corpses weekly? This isn't just my lane. It's my bleeping highway." She's a forensic pathologist based in California, co-author of a book called Working Stiff, 2 years, 262 bodies, and the making of a medical examiner. Dr. Milinek, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for inviting me.
How many bullets do you pull out every week?
I have at least one case a week, and I work in Oakland in California. But I'm only one of five pathologists there, so you can do the math in terms of the overall numbers. The bottom line is that we're not just getting homicides, we're also getting quite a bit of suicides. And we can't talk about risk of gun ownership if we don't also acknowledge suicides, since they are a really significant component of the numbers nationwide.
In fact, let me quote a report from the CDC that in 2015, 27,000 people killed themselves with a were killed by someone with a gun, and 45,000 used a firearm to commit suicide. So we're talking about really a problem on two very separate but also connected fronts.
That is correct. And I got to say that, you know, I'm so proud of the medical community and all the physicians who have come out reacting to this, because in the hospitals and morgues of this country, we are seeing carnage due to the easy accessibility of weapons in this country, and something needs to be done.
Help us understand why this is a public health problem.
It's a public health problem in the same way that seat belts and airbags were installed in vehicles because physicians started to argue about the fact that they were seeing unnecessary injury. It was doctors who fought the auto industry for those changes to be made. It's also doctors who report toys and sports equipment that malfunctions to the Consumer Product Safety Commission in order to get those recalled when they're dangerous to children, when they're choking hazards. Same thing with smoking. All of the restrictions that are in place, the legislation that's in place to restrict smoking in restaurants, to limit advertising to teenagers, that was put in place because of physicians' advocacy. I don't see guns as any different. They're a tool. They can be used in self-defense. They can be used for hunting, but they can also be very dangerous, and we can find ways to restrict them without limiting the Second Amendment.
How different do you think the tobacco industry is, or the car industry is, from the gun industry?
I don't think they're that different. I think that the NRA is primarily an arm of the gun industry at this point. A lot of their funding comes from that. One of the differences we have here is that many of the people who are speaking out against the NRA are actually NRA members themselves. I have many colleagues in law enforcement and also physicians I know who are gun owners. They are law-abiding, they are mentally competent, and they still want to see reasonable common-sense restrictions.
Do you think the NRA was surprised by the response coming from the medical community?
I don't know if they're surprised. I know that they've been silent. What I've noticed is they haven't pushed back. And I think that that's a sign of a sea change on their part. I think they're realizing that many doctors and law enforcement officers who work in coroners and sheriff coroner's offices are not happy about the situation, and they don't want to be told to stay in their lane, because this is what we do every single day. And I can't counsel another family that's lost a loved one to gun violence when we can do something. There are reasonable things that can be accommodated. For example, there are laws called extreme risk protection orders, ERPOs. They're not prevalent. People don't talk about them that much, but they can be instituted to allow law enforcement to take guns away from people who have actively spoken about hurting someone or hurting themselves. And if we started instituting these and enforcing them, then we could definitely make an impact, if not on the homicide, then at least on the suicide rate.
Are doctors, and this is one of the recommendations from the American College of Physicians, is that doctors talk to their patients about whether there are guns in the house or whether there are locks on those guns in the house, whether there are children in the house. Are those conversations taking place?
I think that by the publicity that has come from this, more of these conversations are going to be taking place. And I also want to emphasize that, you know, we were pushing back. Doctors were pushing back to the NRA. The NRA started infiltrating medicine a long time ago. They stepped out of their lane. Back in 1996, they advocated for an amendment that limited funding and didn't allow even for research on gun control. Now, at least it's being allowed, but it's still not being funded. That was called the Dickey Amendment. And then in Florida in 2011, they advocated for what was jokingly referred to as a Docs versus Glocks law, where they were trying to restrict physicians from speaking to their patients about things like whether there's a gun in the home. So they started this. We're just pushing back and saying that not only is it our First Amendment right to talk to patients, because that's what the courts affirmed, but also it's our responsibility and our ethics and the basic standard of good medical care to reach out to the patients and ask them, are they engaging in high-risk behaviors? And that also includes smoking. This falls in the same basket that we want to care for our patients. We want to make sure that they are engaging in safe behaviors.
You referenced the fact that this goes back to the 90s, that the NRA actually lobbied the Centers for Disease Control about researching the causes of gun violence. As you said, in many ways that can happen, but it is underfunded. We're talking a week or so after a massacre out there in California. Do you think there is some pressure to get more research done?
I think it's changing, and I think that with the changes in the House of Representatives, we may have a chance to push forward some bipartisan legislation. The auto industry didn't have to fear from seatbelts. They didn't go out of business as a result of the pressure to put in safety restraints. I don't think the gun industry has anything to be afraid of if we start pushing for restrictions on dangerous people being able to have access to guns. Mm. They also can take advantage of the fact that guns can be made safer. Technology can be used not just with regards to gun locks, but with regards to identifying weapons, putting numbers on them, putting GPS devices on them, so that they can't be just stolen and reused. And if they get some research and development funding, it might be in their very interest to be able to support some sort of legislation.
Well, I'm thinking when there's a transportation accident or a crisis, there was one a couple of years ago here in Philadelphia where a train derailed and all sorts of investigators came in to try to figure out what the cause of this derailment, and there were people that injured and died as a result of that. Is that what you want from the CDC?
That's what I want from the CDC. That's what I want from the federal government, because it's funded by our representatives. So I do encourage people to join organizations such as Moms Demand Action, and there's actually one called Docs Demand Action now as well, and call your representatives, call your political leaders, and let them know that this is something that you care about. They listen, and if you reach out to them, whether it's through the internet or through a phone call, it will let them know that you want this on the next legislative agenda.
One of the doctors, I believe it is an emergency doctor, tweeted out, "We're not anti-gun, we are anti-bullet holes in our patients." And certainly the NRA seemed to accuse the College of Physicians and perhaps those people that are tweeting in support of this report that they are somehow anti-gun. Can you speak to that?
I think part of their concern, especially with regards to the research, is they were concerned that the research was skewed, that limited data was being used to make generalizations about large groups and past legislation that wasn't necessarily supported by the data. As a scientist, I would say if you don't like the research and you don't like the data, do your own research and make sure it's scientifically sound. And if there's too limited a group and not enough of a data set, well, then let's expand that data set. Let's get more robust data. Don't just shut down the conversation. And that's exactly what happened with the Dickey Amendment. We need to fix that.
And when you talk about more data, what more information do we need?
Well, we could look at information about things like the link between domestic violence and gun ownership and the risk to the people in that household. There's definitely more research that can be done with regards to ascertaining whether someone who is mentally ill is a risk or not, because we don't want to just take away guns from people who have depression or who have bipolar disease unless they are an actual risk to others. That would infringe on their rights as individuals. We have to find some sort of way to distinguish those. We can also look at legislation, places that have passed legislation, and why it works and why it doesn't work. For instance, one of the criticisms of gun-free zones in certain cities is that they still have very high gun homicide rates. Well, let's look at where those guns are coming from. If they're coming from adjacent states with lax laws, then something needs to be done about that.
Are you optimistic that we can at least, if not address this problem, begin to reduce the amount of suicides and homicides by gun?
I'm hopeful. I'm hopeful that with dialogue and with things like activism on the part of physicians and students and teachers everywhere, we can start to move our leadership to change things.
And is sitting down with the NRA, do you see that as productive?
Sorry, say that again. I didn't hear the question.
Sitting down with the NRA, would that be a productive thing to do?
I think that if we can come up with legislation that the NRA could actually not oppose, I don't know if necessarily that they would support it, but as long as they're not in active opposition and they understand where it's coming from, we'd be making a step forward. There's a lot that they can benefit from as well. You know, I work in a city where we have a very large drug problem as well. And at a certain point, the drug dealers realize that they can't be distributing such powerful drugs because their actual customers are dying. Oh. And I think that the NRA has to realize at some point that this what they're pushing, and specifically their legislative agenda, is at a disconnect with their own membership. Their own membership doesn't necessarily support this.
Well, we're almost out of time here, but do you think if the NRA had not responded or criticized this report from the American College of Physicians, we would be having this conversation?
I do think that they woke a sleeping giant. I agree with that. And I think the timing was bad, too, because it was on the heels of the massacre in Pittsburgh at the synagogue and then also the other one in Thousand Oaks.
Right.
So it was a combination of their reaction and the timing.
Well, Dr. Julie Melinek, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times, especially getting up so early in California.
Yeah, no problem. It's my pleasure.
Pleasure for us as well. She's a forensic pathologist based in California. And again, talking about the online battle, if I can put it that way, between the American College of Physicians, a report about a public health approach to gun violence and the response from the NRA. She's co-author of a book called Working Stiff, 2 Years, 262 Bodies, and the Making of a Medical Examiner. We've got a first-time novelist, a fiction writer waiting in the wings. We'll be talking after this very short break, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.